Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Dalitz.
Hi, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy. My name is Matthew Dalitz. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Neuropsychotherapist, and I'm here with our managing editor, Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Matt. How are you going, and how's everybody out there going?
Yes, we're all going well. Now, today we're going to be listening to a licensed marriage and family therapist, a applied neuroscience clinician, and a rapid resolution therapist. Her name is Mary Bowles. She's from Colorado. And she's going to be talking about rapid resolution therapy and what she's going to be presenting at the upcoming IAAN conference. And let me tell you about that, because they are sponsoring this show today. So the International Association of Applied Neuroscience is having their first international conference of applied neuroscience. That's going to be in Sydney on the 22nd to the 24th of May, 2019. Now, their special guest is going to be John Arden, and he'll be presenting a pre-conference workshop on the 21st of May, and he'll be their keynote as well. So if you are going to be in Sydney, or if you are interested in the whole idea of applied neuroscience in this world of mental health that we live, then get yourself down to Sydney. It's going to be a great conference. Richard.
Yes. So I'm excited because they've got their thing to mention there is the get in there for the early bird by the end of February. So that's a great thing to grasp hold of. Always like getting a bit of a bargain on things if you can. But Mary is one of the speakers at the conference, and she'll be expanding even more on what she talks about us today. So I'm keen to get into to chat with her. But in addition to these conferences and, of course, the podcasts, we also do work. We have a lot of opportunities on our website for education. What's one of the goodies that we have on our website for people, Matt?
Yeah, we do. So we have specially curated a bunch of different really cool courses for you to do and to gain CEU points as well if you're a professional in this arena and you need education points. Let me just mention the Masters of Trauma. This is a course produced by PESI, and it has a bunch of trauma specialists that will give you 7 continuing education hours. And people like Bessel van der Kolk, Janina Fischer, Peter Levine, a whole bunch of really great trauma specialists that have been around forever and they know their stuff. You can get them all together in this course. So check that out. That's on our recommended courses page on thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.
And I think it's at a special price at the moment. So jump in on that to get advantage.
Get
your early bird price on everything, which is fantastic.
Okay, so let's jump across to the interview. Mary Bowles, welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary. Richard sending his best wishes.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, Matt.
So, Mary, you're coming from Colorado to us today. What's it like over there?
It's snowy and cold and wet.
Snowy and cold. What sort of temperatures are you getting? Because we know, I think it was about a week ago, you were getting like almost Arctic temperatures.
Yeah, I think we're mid-high 20s.
Okay.
See, this is the value of our podcast being international, Mary, is that each time lately we've been doing weather reports. but it is on the basis of this extraordinary weather that's going on, it'll probably this whole idea of things being in extremes is actually a much, much broader subject. So I'm sure that'll come into our discussion. But anyway, thank you for the weather report.
Yes. I didn't know I was doing weather today, but I'm all right with that.
Yes, we don't know weather. That's right. Yeah.
If I can complain about the cold, I will.
Now, Mary, you are a licensed marriage and family therapist, a certified clinical neuropsychotherapist, and you do this thing called rapid resolution therapy.
Yeah. The neuropsychotherapist title we've changed with the IAAN.
Ah, yes, yes. So now you're doing applied neuroscience.
Yes. That's so I'm an applied neuroscience practitioner.
Okay, wonderful.
Well, the terminologies are, they fiddle around with semantics and things, but it is relevant that we get it.
I'm just making sure we meet regulations.
Yeah, because I think the term clinical had problems with some things because of relative hours. Of course, the broad issue is you've done plenty of hours, and so actually, as a practical expression of your capacities and skills, you're well clinical, but it's just a technical aspect of bureaucracy, and we know how much we love bureaucracy. Bureaucracy and the snow, similar categories.
It's kind of a cold day.
Yeah,
but I think you guys, with your applied neuroscience angle, you know, you've really hit the nail on the head there. So that's great.
So let's see how you do that. I mean, this RRT, which is really interesting. Now, we've got the article, a fabulous article, which is was so good, I'd split it up into two parts. So to give people a good, clear view, because I wanted to highlight the technicalities of it and the structures, but then also the case studies and the work. So everyone got a good sense, because I think that's sometimes what bothers me when I read things. I either get the cases and I go, but what am I doing? Or I get the technicals and I say, yeah, but how do I do it? Or it's just so truncated, we don't get it. So I've enjoyed splitting it up into a couple of parts, and it's really good.
So just for those people that are just dropping in and you know, they're new to who we are. So we're talking about The Neuropsychotherapist, which is our regular monthly magazine that we have on thescienceofpsychotherapy.com. So if you go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com, you will find... Well, there's a lot of things to find there, right? but that's the home of The Neuropsychotherapist. And I'll put links in the show notes so you can go directly to these articles we're talking about.
Anyway, we keep talking about things. You've got to get to Mary. Get to Mary.
Sorry, Mary. Mary, back. Rapid resolution.
Yeah, so rapid resolution therapy is really a very different way of doing therapy. And I remember when I went to my first training, my jaw was on the floor a few times thinking, this is not anything like we were ever taught. Mm. But having experienced it myself, as I describe in the article, and have, you know, do it frequently enough that I can apply it to myself in a lot of different ways and have, it's different because it really gives clients a language for communicating their stresses and their traumas, and the therapist is in the position of a leader versus a follower, and you know, someone that kind of tugs somebody in a direction. You really keep your client with you, and that's why I like memory reconsolidation. Applying that to RRT really helped understand why it works so well. You know, I was very much a concrete thinker, and this helped me put it, you know, define the abstract concepts a little better. So I knew what I was doing. So for instance, I was taught to, you know, talk with my clients and, gosh, I forget a lot of the language now too, you know, repeat back what they say and, you know, mm-hmm. that motivational interviewing, approach. And, this really allowed me to, instead of strengthening those neural networks that have maintained that stress and trauma, we activate it just enough to, unlock those neural connections and connect them to new emotions and new ways of responding to the way the brain has stored the historical experiences.
Because it's interesting. I mean, this idea of leading and following. I think because when you're saying following, are you leading and follow, but following more as in relation to following a methodology doctrine? Or following the client, because actually you're saying you are following or responding, you know, indirect co-creating with the client.
Sure. I think when I say that, if I have a client that comes in and they start delving into a trauma, for instance, they will say, this happened, and you can see their body react as if it's happening again while they're telling me that, and I will just stop them. And I do the same when I'm seeing a couple. And notoriously, as a couples therapist, you have couples that have been in an argument on the way into therapy, and a lot of therapists will, really try to ask a lot of questions to understand each other's perspectives, but they're both in a fight or flight response, and so I will just completely redirect their focus, much like Dan Siegel talks about, and so I don't let their focus be on what their brain is reacting to in the moment, but I may say, well, let's stop and talk about one of the happiest moments that you've experienced. And so it's not about what we talk about, it's the emotion that comes with it. Yes, and so when I get them into a position where they like their partner, all of a sudden it makes it easier for them to be a little softer with their approach, things like that. So we don't want to strengthen those fight or flight responses. We want to downregulate them.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, for me, the language I would use, it's leading in a responsive way, which is of course great, a greatness aspect, but not certainly not being led by an external technicality. And that's what happens when we suddenly find ourselves deeply trying to follow our method. And when a method is broad, I mean, certainly as Dan Siegel says, and the work I do with Ernie Rossi, explain to people that taking a client off in a direction, we call it facilitating, and you call it leading. It's very similar, but leading from this co-creative and engaged perspective, enhanced by the neuroscience, by the understanding of the neuroscience. And I think this is where it really comes into its fore, because I certainly can agree with a lot of therapists who are beautifully intuitive and who are able to naturally, in some ways, when we talk about Milton Erickson, he was beautifully intuitive, didn't have the science. But now we do. And I love that thing you're saying, you're watching them and you're going, oh, hello. Here we've got the fight and flight, we've got the sympathetic coming in, or these people are looking like they're moving towards re-traumatizing. Let's facilitate, let's redirect, let's take some leadership here and move it forward. This is how am I going? Am I getting a grasp of things?
Yeah, and I think, the thing I like about RRT is there's so many subtleties in language that can actually really increase one sense of trauma or stress. And so if a client comes in and says, they explain what they've been going through, a therapist, I did beforehand would say, so you're really struggling with this. And now with RRT, the subtleties of language that might increase that. Now I would say, you had been really struggling with this. So the minute they walk in the door, we're moving that into a past tense and activating that hippocampus. So it starts telling the amygdala, there's no threat here. And so we change the context of even how they respond to it in that moment.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was saying I had dinner with a wonderful chap named Michael Yapko, who's well known in a lot of fields and areas. But we were talking about the same thing last night, that therapy and therapeutic approach and behavior of the therapist without context just then becomes procedure, and that becomes a failing. So I'm really this sort of language you're describing here fits in and is engaged with so many other areas. And what we're adding, and one of the key things that, as I was reading your article, is just adding this understanding of neural behavior into the mix. And this is what is strengthening it. And this is the key point. And of course, why the neuropsychotherapist is so interested in the science of psychotherapy is so interested in talking to you.
I think everybody likes to know more about themselves. So when I explain to them about the brain and how even when they're upset and they're angry, that that's a normal response to what's been wired into the brain in the past, but it may not be very effective. If you grow up in a household where the family yells at each other to communicate, yelling is a normal response. And if we criticize that or diminish that in any way, we're telling that person they're not normal. And so we really look at that family history and help them understand why this is normal and where you learned it and how it may not be effective in this context, because now you're married to somebody who lived in a family that didn't communicate. They were more passive, and so that can be very threatening. And so when you understand the brain is wired to fight or flee aggression, and you understand how to define aggression, it becomes easier to communicate those vulnerabilities that underlie anger.
How do you find clients respond to that sort of neuroeducation?
Yeah, very much like I describe in the article. It's very simplified, but very clear, the triune brain. And now I listened to John Arden's podcast, his most recent one this morning. I was like, oh, a little nervous about saying triune brain because he's so amazing.
but it has a framework.
It's very useful. Yeah. It's very useful in helping my clients understand the different parts of the brain and what part are you in a survival response or a thriving response in that moment, and a really drawn back to, where do you feel that in your body when you want to yell? Because that's the first indication that there's something we might be able to put in place that turns that off if you pay attention to the feeling that precedes it.
Yeah, I just want to highlight in there, sorry, Matt, but I know you got something, so hold on to that. Just want to highlight that point where you're saying, you're talking away, we're talking about neuroscience, we're talking about neuroeducation, and then you say, but I'm asking a client where they feel it in the body. So it's good to just highlight that we're talking still about this whole of body, this whole system approach, and that the RRT doesn't limit things to the skull-based brain, as Dan Siegel talks about it. So I just want to highlight that's a place of addition, this beautiful neuroscience, not a place of restriction.
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, Matt.
There's so many easy ways to teach a client to understand that somatic awareness. One of the examples, I think it's in the article, it's been a while since I read it. One of the easy ways is I will explain to them, that in our culture, we've learned that feelings hurt. And so maybe you have a memory that brings up this gut punch feeling in your stomach, and we call it a gut punch feeling. And then if you've ever been punched in the gut or crashed your bike into your abdomen and you remember what that feels like, you realize that hurts and the other one's just a sensation based on adrenaline and cortisol that's being pumped into your body based solely on a thought. And so that really, and then if I say, imagine your excitement about your next vacation, you get butterflies in your stomach, and it's really amazing to see how that just turns on the awareness of, holy cow, I've been feeling things physically.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that association where these networks are all overlapping, aren't they? I've just written down here as a note to myself this broad concept of language/story, then a little arrow, activation of certain networks and association between networks. That arrow that goes from activation to association, I mean, that's where the intervention happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we want to reassociate activations in neural networks with...
Yeah, create new associations.
And that's the memory reconsolidation theory, yeah.
I think one of the nice things about RRT is you can create that association without ever addressing a trauma. So when somebody comes in and says, I was sexually assaulted. We don't go into all the details of that because that's going to activate more of the fight or flight response based on how it's stored in our brains to fight or flee that. And So when you have a thought, your body goes into that fight or flight response. But a really cool way of getting a client to create that association is that you might say, and John Connolly, this is something he taught us, the developer of RRT. He says, if I ask you to tell me about putting your shoes on today, you can remember that. And I'll explain to them it's stored in your hippocampus. It's your short-term memory and it hasn't been discharged into your long-term memory yet because you haven't slept. But if I ask you to tell me about putting your shoes on yesterday, all of a sudden you draw a blank because there's no emotion attached to that unless you fell and hit your head and, then you might remember it. But if I say to you, what do we do about you putting your shoes on yesterday? All of a sudden your brain automatically gets it. There's nothing I need to do about what's not happening. And so you've created that knowing what it feels like to not do anything about what's not happening. And you let them feel that for a minute. And then we apply it to, well, what do we do about you being sexually assaulted 15 years ago? And it causes that disagreement. Oh, wait, that's not happening either. It's not any more than me putting my shoes on yesterday. So you can create those new emotional awarenesses without re-traumatizing a client. You create the disagreement before you even add that to it.
Yes, within there, I'm seeing my favorite thing being implemented there, and that's the stimulation of curiosity.
Yes.
So it's, how about this and how about that? And if you look at it there and let's go there, which instead of going, oh, tell me more about the trauma, which just goes into narrative, which just goes into, which has its place, I suppose, in therapy, but it's something we need to be much more cautious of than I think we are. I think holding the space, for example, is a really beautiful aspect, but sometimes therapists, I think, misunderstand that you can hold the space too long. And sometimes you can hold the space so long that people stay in the space.
Absolutely. So
have the space, create the space, embrace the space, hold the space, and then with a curious frame of mind and an inquiring frame of mind and these associations, it's you can see what I love about good therapies is that you can see the elements of lots of other good therapies in that therapy. And that I think is what makes it true. It's another interpretation. It's another frame because each individual therapist needs to find something that is comfortable for them and works suitably for them. That what we know this from the research. Now you create the relationship and then you go down a path where the therapist and the client are happy with the therapy. So anyway, what I was saying was, gee, Mary, that's great.
Amazing. I'm super happy that I learned about that, and it's been amazing there was one lady I saw, she had been sexually abused as a child, and her daughter was now at the same age that she was, and I saw her for 35 minutes. And because she had never dealt with it, never gone through therapy, and all it took was 35 minutes for her to change the context of that previous memory so that her brain got the message that there's nothing that needs to be done about this.
Sometimes people are ready to go.
Could you step us through a little bit of what actually happened in that sort of session?
Well, I probably talked about putting your shoes on yesterday, mm-hmm. and how her brain has kind of, before she got that message, that experience had happened and her brain had been responding as if I need to be afraid of something like that happening again. And I love the quote, assuming I get it right, no man is ever in the same river twice and he's never the same man.
Yes.
And so, there's certain quotes like that that you can help them really get that the cells of your body have changed. The parts of your body that were touched by that person are not even present on your body anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's so many incredible ways that RRT gives language to be able to change that. So she would come in. I would say, just give me a newspaper headline of what you're struggling with. And I don't need any more than that for that neural connection to be activated, you know, that mm-hmm. network to mm-hmm. be activated. And then we just start working on it. And I think that's the beauty of RRT as therapists, we have a desire to use our ability to empathize. And so we can kind of understand what our clients have been through. And if we don't have any understanding, we just check, am I getting it? So we're actually doing the one that's, you know, are the ones that are talking, and they're clarifying for us. And we chat a little bit and just to get clear understanding, but our chatting is also creating different emotional states, right. You know, calmer, peaceful, being able to laugh at the same time you're talking about a sexual assault is what turns on your brain's ability to get the message that nothing needs to be done here. How many times have you seen somebody laughing when they're being chased by a tiger? It doesn't happen when you're in a fight or flight response. So when you turn on that ability to laugh, it works to get your brain to get the message. Oh, I don't need to do anything about this. So it can be very quick.
I just want to highlight one point, which was really important there in my thinking, was that we don't, to activate the neural network, which allows you then to be able to reconsolidate in a positive and successful way, you don't need to totally regenerate the memory of the trauma. All you need to do is do enough. And I love that, what you said there. Just a newspaper headline enough. That will be enough. So I think this is just very important to point out that the activating the neural network is important, but that doesn't necessarily need to do a great dive into the trauma. And in fact, it's not good to do a great dive into the trauma.
Yeah.
There's two things happening here. You're doing the neuroeducation, you're doing the educating the client and what's going on in their brain, in their whole system. And then you've got this attunement thing happening between yourself and the client. There's that deeper level of attachment, I guess. Which is going on.
And yeah, that's where the neuropsychotherapy is so important, yes. Because you create an enriched environment. You're offering them safety. You're ensuring that you get that their responses have been normal, and all you do is change it to, let's just help you be more effective. Mm-hmm. So nothing abnormal about you. We don't pathologize anything. I rarely use the DSM unless I need it to offer resources for a kid at school. So you offer them the safety, you offer them the connection, you offer them the control. Mm. And so when I say control, the ability to influence their environment, to reduce chaos or rigidity. So I'm keeping the chaos out and I'm keeping the rigidity out. Safety, connection, control, dopamine. We're creating as much satisfaction in that environment as possible. A sense of calm, a sense of laughter, any of those positive emotions that activate your dopamine system. Mm. And your sense of self. You could never have been any better than you were. We don't see glaring better options and choose the bad one. We're doing the best we can do with what we know at the time. And so you, this is how you can create connection with your clients without validating everything that this happened to me, right? Happened is past tense, right? So we want to keep them knowing that it's a separate time and you can't go get it and bring it here. We're not going to pick it apart. We don't have to. We just want your brain to get the message. It's not happening now and I'm safe. Maybe it's helpful to talk about that somatic awareness and how when I ask them, where do you feel that in your body when you think of that sexual assault or that argument that you and your husband had, where do you feel that in your body? And by giving that them that awareness ahead of time, you know, we think about it for a second and let them really pay attention to, where do I feel it in my body? Maybe I feel it in my chest or my shoulders. And then that's all we have to do to create an awareness that there's a physical response to it. And then we do the work, you know, about putting your shoes on and where is that? And, you know, the different techniques that RRT offers, you know, maybe we do some meditation, I will, I'll ask them, do you like the beach? Because I like the beach. And and so I'll walk through, a meditation, where I'll say, imagine your feet in the sand, and you can feel the cool sand underneath and the warm sand on top. And, maybe you can hear some seagulls. And so I get them to a really calm place. And then we'll check that feeling. Can you make that happen? Sometimes all it takes is for them to be in a calmer place at the same time that they're thinking about those memories. Right. I think I mentioned ghost busting in the article. I think that was probably in part two. Ghost busting is really fascinating, because once you create that somatic awareness, it could be linked to the earliest memory. So for instance, if you just can't tolerate being yelled at, I might say, where do you feel that in your body? And they'll say, my chest. And I'll say, just close your eyes for a minute and pay attention to that feeling, and let yourself go back to the very first time you ever felt something like that. And it's amazing how their brain just comes up with some random story and they think it's not related, but I can always find a relationship. My mom used to yell all the time, or I remember a teacher embarrassing me in front of the class. And you clear that earliest connection, and it's like it clears all the associations from that earlier one. And so the client's struggling with what's happening today, but it's connected to what happened 10 years ago. You reassociate, reconsolidate that memory, and it takes everything with it. Wow. I had a lady, she was really struggling with her daughter who had been sexually abused, and she just couldn't get her to move past a point. And so I did an RRT session with her, and we found out she recalled this memory of being embarrassed in front of the classroom. And she had talked about how miserable middle school was for her. We clear that experience of being embarrassed in front of the classroom, and all of a sudden she had this flood of, middle school was awesome. I had this experience and I had this friend, and she remembered all of it. So it's just amazing.
Well, so that was masking all of the good experiences. Yeah. And wow.
Okay. Yeah, you get stuck in that survival response, and your energy is going right back to your survival brain instead of your thriving brain.
And it's so interesting that term clear that you use, you clear that issue. People, that word is used in a lot of different therapeutic contexts. I have a certain degree of work that I do in the hypnotherapeutic world as well. And there's a lot of people talking about that. And I'm sitting there watching them say, I'm saying, you have no idea what you're talking about. You know what you're meaning. You know what you want. But you actually don't know what that word means. And this is the beauty of the neuroscience and memory reconsolidation, is that the clearing of the issue is the reassociating of the neurobiological framework so that the issue can become the past. It can become put into memory states. It can be taken away from being an overpowering stuff. And it's actually a well-understood neurobiological response that has been in our nature for however many thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And understanding it helps us realize that it's magical, but it's not magic. And that's a beautiful thing.
When I ask them, where do you feel that in your chest? Once we go through this process of clearing those associations, I'll say, can you make that feeling happen in your chest again? And they cannot make it happen. It removes the emotional response from that memory so that it's no different than putting their shoes on yesterday. And so they know it when they leave the office.
And that's the memory consolidation, Matt, isn't it? This process, which is so important, which we've talked about so often.
Yeah, and so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's this understanding that the neurons literally separate, become labile, and then reconnect. It's an entire new set of gene expression, a entire new set of protein structure, and it's a entire new set of processes, as different from the concept we have of just extinguishing, where you produce an alternative neural network, which is another way of doing things, which is parallel, and one is stronger than the other, but the other one doesn't disappear. In memory reconsolidation, you create a new framework, and which we kind of, the rewiring has become kind of misused. But in the context of now, where we're talking in good, reasonable neuroscientific knowledge, that rewiring is literally what happens. It's altering the nature of flow and energy information in the brain, the pathways and processes.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful and doable and natural thing to do.
And like Dan Siegel says, where attention goes, energy flows. And so you change where the attention goes.
Yeah, wonderful. Mary, is there anything you'd like? Now, you're going to be talking about this in Sydney in May, aren't you? You're at the IAAN conference. And so this will be your topic.
Yes.
Once again, you know, we'll leave a link in the show notes for people so they know how to find you there. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, register for the conference. Early bird pricing ends on the 28th of February. So get the cheaper pricing right now and check it out. You can go to the website and click on events and see what there is to offer.
And meet Mary, who's coming out to enjoy some warm weather.
Yes.
Although in May, we're going to start to cool down in May, but we won't tell you that.
Right. Yeah. I remember because I was there in Melbourne last year in May, so I'll bring my warmer shoes next time.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mary. It's nice to expand and just give the dialogue of actual casework. And for me, the highlights that really came out, in addition to what I already understand about RRT, is talking about, yes, it includes somatic realization. Yes, it includes all kinds of using literalism, using metaphor. Yes, RRT is not a limited or restricted thing to a neuroscience, a neuroeducation process. What it does is it's all these wonderful things with neuroscience added in. And that's kind of the feeling I'm going away with it, which is what I got from your article as well. But you've done it so much, so beautifully here in this. I'm sure people will love to come to listen to your lecture.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you. Enjoy your warm weather today.
We will.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a fabulous session, Matt. Lovely stuff. I love the way Mary really, in this session, perhaps even a bit more than her article, she made it clear to me that it was not just a cognitive, neurobiological, therapeutic approach, that it really embraced the whole system, which is, of course, what we love. And, of course, I loved it when I could recognize my curiosity, the love of my life coming into the process.
Yeah.
So, really good. I think her talk down at the IAAN is going to be really interesting.
Yeah. You know, whereas the more people we talk to, the more we can see, you know, these commonalities, can't we? The neurobiological basis of what we're all doing, regardless of our, you know, specific approaches. And I think that's so valuable.
And it's a matter of, because I've heard this term neurobabble quite a lot. In people that are frustrated with it. And I think there's good reason to that. So constantly we need to work towards making the neuroscience both reliable, useful, and beneficial, not just pretentious and confusing. So just keep working. We're going to keep working. It's actually new, this whole idea of engaging neuroscience in psychotherapeutic work. So good on you, Mary, and good on you, RRT. It produces some lovely perspectives and views on some really good age and old and well-tried therapeutic processes. I'm really happy about today. But
beautiful.
We now have to go off and prepare ourselves for another week of activity and then another podcast.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you so much, Richard. And I'll catch you next week.
Okay, bye for now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.